Hiya. As I said, my name is Gulliver Smithers. I wanted to give you, it's more like a case study, basically. It's kind of how we developed our new user experience at Crackle, because I think it was a really interesting journey for the team. And there's some great learnings in there for how we see the whole living room experience evolving. So I won't bore you too much with the wall of words, but fundamentally, what we were seeing was, historically, VOD was like a PC experience, and I kind of grew up with that, working in the early days of the industry. And then it migrated to mobile and tablet. There's quite a lot of excitement about that. But as things like Rokus and connected TVs really started to take off and get their user experiences right, what we saw was this huge migration of viewing to the living room. And this was being seen like everywhere, not just Crackle, but like all around the world. And I think right now we're at about 70% of our viewing hours are happening in the living room, right? So there's this kind of slightly ironic journey of VOD. It kind of escapes from linear TV, goes off onto these devices, and then ends up back in the living room, and viewers really valuing that you know, being able to select their own content, et cetera. So we had to respond to this, and what we found was that our connected experience in the living room, it wasn't great. We'd done a lot of focus on the web, a lot of focus on mobile, but the connected experience, because it's so fragmented and these things are changing all the time, it wasn't really moving with the time. So we knew we had to overhaul it, and this is really the story of where we got to. So Crackle, premium AVOD service, Hollywood movies, TV shows, the sort of stuff you'll recognize, and part of Sony Pictures TV networks. It's been around for about 10 years, live in about 20 countries. It's mostly Latin America, Canada, Australia, the US, et cetera, and available in a bunch of languages, and a really big distribution footprint. So because it's been around for a while, over the years, we've evolved with the market, and we've caught up. We've been in all the new device releases, so Amazon TV, you know, all those kinds of Android TV, et cetera, all those kinds of things. We're there on a big, really big footprint. So that's the service. It's quite a big player in OTT standards. I don't normally like to compare us to these SVOD services because we are free. You don't have to register. You can just use the service. So we're a slightly different beast. Right? We don't have subscribers. But that's kind of where we sit in terms of how people are seeing us, how people are using the product and recognizing the brand. And as I said before, about 69-70%. I think it's probably 70% by now. And the people are seeing this everywhere. I saw it. I worked at the BBC prior to Sony, and we saw it there as well. It's a huge, huge number of the audience now just wanting to consume this in the living room. And what's ironic about this is once people discover these services in their living room, they tend not to use them so much on the other devices. So you get this really weird thing where your uniques drop and you panic. And then you actually look at your numbers and you realize your viewing hours are right up. Because actually you've got it in the right place, right? And consumers know that they can find you in the living room, and that's kind of where they want it. So we've been downloaded many, many millions of times across mobile and connected TV. I mean, the general point here is it's everywhere, right? You can see the distribution footprint. I think only Netflix has a bigger footprint in the US because there's some devices on here that some of the others don't go on, et cetera. So I think there's about 26 apps and then a bunch of other distribution partners. So very widely distributed. And this is how it looked about 2 years ago. Not great. I mean, it's okay, right? You can find stuff and filter and things like that, but it doesn't look very modern. It doesn't look very enticing. And that's really where we started, right? So this is what we now call Crackle Classic. and so we went on this journey to say, okay, well, how can we really reinvigorate this, right? We all know the problem where you're kind of just scrolling through thumbnails and eventually have an argument with someone else in the room and then eventually end up deciding not to watch anything because you can't agree on something. And, you know, it just takes time. And there's really clear stats that show the longer it takes you to find something, the less likely you are to find something. So that whole get a hit and get them comfortably watching something kind of really tails off quite sharply after a few minutes. And so the idea really was, how do we get people right into the action, right into the content, and engage them immediately rather than having this kind of quiet navigational experience, which doesn't really lend itself very well to, you know, to a living room, right? So, hypothesis. Linear TV is great because it's just on. And you don't know what's on. You just turn it on. It goes to the last channel you were on, and it could be anything. And you go, oh, you'll end up watching a movie and just zoning out. And we thought, there's something in there. And you get these really long session times, right? Viewers just watch stuff. And so we thought, yeah, this is a good thing about linear TV, and we should try and replicate it. The other thing that we know is, and as we said before, we've actually got data on this, users don't want to spend a lot of time looking for things. So the service should immediately engage. And the other hypothesis was that by scheduling in a linear way, i.e. day parting and you know, promoting hits and things like that, we could actually get good results in terms of getting people to immediately engage with the content, rather than that kind of algorithmic wraparound thing, which I don't know. I mean, I don't mind it, but after a while, it kind of turns into a bit of a hall of mirrors, right? And you don't sort of escape. So you don't get any surprises when you're in an algorithmic service. It's kind of very tailored. And you kind of was constantly going, just show me something new. And this is what we wanted to be able to do, right? So these were the, this was the hypothesis. So, world map is very faded there. It's supposed to show a world map. I can't see it peripherally, but it is there. So my team don't just do Crackle. We support dozens of services globally. And we have a process we go through where we gather the data from what we're seeing on different devices in different parts of the world and what users are doing, and how they're engaging, time of day, type of device, screen size, session time, all this kind of data points. And using all that and synthesizing and looking at what other people are doing, we discover new features and new ideas. And we wireframe them, we prototype, and we validate around showing people around the office, you know, this look all right. And then we test it, two-way mirrors and eye tracking and all that good stuff. And you know, you have to have a kind of filter on this because you can't validate and test everything. It's expensive, right? So the data helps us point us in the right directions. And then we analyze the results of the tests, and then we deploy it, and we do it all over again, right? So this is how we approach product development process, and it's the approach we took with Always On. So that's just a bit about how we work. So we use that process to really get into what users needed. And in this case, the real focus was the living room. What do they need in the living room? And what we're finding is you come home from work, you're tired, you want good quality video, you want to be able to lean back, you don't want to be looking at your keyboard pressing too many buttons, and you don't want to be asked too many questions, and there may be more than one person in the living room, right? So we start to tailor the product experience around these need states. There are different, obviously, need states for mobile. Typically, mobile is about sharing and social and short attention or short periods of time available, that kind of thing. And PC is, you know, usually search and input. But PC users we're finding more and more these days are pretty fickle, right? Retaining browser users is hard. Retaining any digital users is hard, but browser is particularly bad for that because there's just so many other distractions going on. So getting people to download on the connected TV, getting them to immediately enjoy and engage in the content, these are high-quality users. We retain them, and they watch longer and longer sessions over time. So a lot of companies, a lot of forward-thinking companies, are looking at neuroscience as an input into their product development process, and we're no exception, right? So there's a guy called Kahneman. You may have heard of him. He got a Nobel Prize for this study about the fast brain and the slow brain. And the fast brain is the one that just kind of makes instinctive decisions and is quick and emotional and reactive. And the slow brain is the one that you use usually at work, unless you have a fast brain job. But you're kind of thinking about things, and you've booted up this expensive part of your brain. You're burning a lot of energy, and you're doing logic and trying to figure things out. And what we find in testing is if when we're looking at the users when they're trying the products, we've got these two-way mirrors, and we look at them. If their brow starts to descend, or they start to kind of do that, you go, we've failed here. This is not good. As you're developing a product experience, it should be really quick, really intuitive. Now, there are different approaches for different industries, but I would argue in entertainment, our job is to connect the user with the main product, which is the video, as quickly as we can, or the content as quickly as we can. If you're doing, searching for airline tickets or something, you are going to use the slow brain because you're going to want to think about that. But if you come home from work, you're tired, and you just switch on your VOD service, if it starts asking you tough questions, you're not going to come back too often, right? So we build products and user experiences for the fast brain. The intention is to instinctively get that user into watching something quickly. And so that bleeds into our user experience approach. So we reduce the number of decision points. We avoid asking the user to think about things too much. We make it intuitive and easy. And be respectful of the need state. Don't ask them to start typing in their email address on a remote control. It's maddening. And so so this is how we apply neuroscience to user experience design for video on demand products, right? So but it wasn't just the user interface. We had to really think about the scheduling strategy as well. And we had to create channels which the users could engage with. We had to create schedule points where you dropped users in so it felt like they just joined a show halfway through, but it happened to be the best bit of the show. So you get that kind of best of linear and VOD. It's like you drop in the key scene of a classic movie. You're like, oh, I remember this. And you watch it, but you don't want to drop them in the boring bit. So that requires a bit of scheduling and a bit of thinking about as well. Day parts, obviously, earlier in the day, there might be kids around, that kind of thing. And thematic programming, so you know, the audience know where and when to find the content each day. The other thing that we do a lot of at Crackle is make our own content. And in the past, we were quite famous for Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which was one of our original shows. But more recently, we've been doing things like Snatch and Startup, which are getting quite a lot of industry buzz. Actually, they're pretty good shows, and I have a high bar, but actually, I quite enjoy these. These are pretty good. And so we've been producing quite a lot of this year. We've got movies, we've got comedies, etc. And this was all in the mix. So obviously, with some of this stuff, you can't just drop someone in halfway through because they've got no familiarity with the show. So the scheduling of how you present this to the user really needs to be thought about on a case-by-case basis. And that's quite a lot of work. The other thing about Crackle is it isn't just Sony. We license from all these guys, and it's a pretty wide variety of content in there. It's quite a big catalog. Ours changes monthly. I think with some of the guys like Amazon and Netflix, you'll see them, they have stuff that's just up for years and they might change annually or every 6 months. We change quite a lot. So we got, it's often quite different when you come back, but it's the same kind of stuff. So these are the multiplex channels we created, and they're effectively just ways of grouping genre content. But I'll show you in a minute how they are actually scheduled, and you get to see a kind of EPG-like build of the different kinds of shows that they have in there. So this is how it goes. Crackle Drama will have a drama, season 2, episode 3, season 2, episode 4. It'll then have a movie, and then it'll have another TV drama. I mean, it might be a classic, might be something you've seen before, but these just roll. So when you drop into the product, it just starts on one of these, and it just rolls you through. And if you don't do anything, it just keeps going. So that's kind of like linear TV, right? It's like looking at the TV guide and working out what you're going to see that evening. Same for comedy, right? It might drop you into a classic Seinfeld or something like that. And that it's good. It hooks people. But you get the best of both because you can take the targeted recommendations at the end of the show when you've finished it, and you can just go with the flow of it. So you can start and say, oh, actually, I did enjoy episode 3 of Seinfeld season 4 or whatever. I'm going to watch episode 4. And you can go with that. So you can kind of create your own schedule too. So you get this, just relax and let it roll, or I can branch off, or if you want to, you can go and actually delve deeper into the catalog, which I'll show you. I've got some screenshots of that. So the solution to the problems we were talking about and the scheduling and all that kind of stuff, we called it Always On. And this is kind of what it looks like. I think we were taking it live mostly. It was actually a lot of it went live in the first half of last year. There are still some of the things that are going live, and we've got some results from the deployments as well. And we're currently just kind of iterating through and revamping and executing on a roadmap. And I've got a few pointers to how it looks. But first, I'll just show you a video. This is it about a month ago on PlayStation 4. So there's no sound on this. It's just really to show you how it is. So you go into PlayStation. You select Crackle. This is assuming you're already installed. And it rolls Super Mansion, which is one of our originals. It's a stop-motion show with Bryan Cranston and people like that in it. It's pretty funny. And so it rolls that, and that just automatically comes on. And then over the top, these are your channels. So you can scroll down through the channels. And each day or each week, they'll change these, and there'll be different suggestions and different things there. And that's really our kind of what we think you might want, right? So, and you can see from the fandom one, this one's better suited to a PlayStation, so it's prioritized at the top. It's kind of gamer-focused content. You're going to get zombie movies and things like that in there, right? Anime and things. And that's focused on that platform. But on other platforms, like Roku, you might focus on drama, right? And have that at the top. So here we've got metadata and a few other features that we have. And you can see, and we spend a bit of time on the metadata trying to get it right so that it's easier for people to find the shows. So this is Super Mansion. This is people adding it to watch later, et cetera. And then if there isn't anything in those channels we've laid out for you that are just kind of there for you that evening, and you're looking for something specific, or you've been searching for a movie and you know Crackle's got it, you can go into the movies section or the TV section, and you can search through the deeper catalog there. So it's all kind of there in the background. But the idea is that we think we're going to get a better hit by connecting the user to something that's been scheduled for that evening. So that's the general idea, is kind of like trying to get them interested in something up front. But again, if you know the other use cases are supported, you can just go and search for particular shows that you know we have or particular shows that you're looking for. The other thing we have is this is My Crackle. So you don't have to register to use Crackle, but if you are registered, you get some benefits, like you can save stuff. It remembers where you were in a show. It gives you some recommendations, et cetera. So that's the kind of personalized bit of the service. And we're doing a bit of work this year building that out and improving it. So, but this is what you get, effectively, if you register. So that's Crackle. That's Always On. It's been pretty good, really. In terms of users, I think that's looping again. So the other thing we did was we kind of echoed the schedule on mobile. It's worked okay on mobile. You can see there's some good results there. I would say it's not as effective on mobile, right? Because I think mobile is a slightly different set of use cases. And we're giving this a bit of an overhaul over the summer. But just putting the channels there has been quite successful because it's really just a way of promoting either popular or salient or modern new content rather than just letting a user scroll through lists and lists and lists, which is best avoided in this space. So that's the always on mobile. So that was it, right? So what did we learn? So it's been live for most best part of a year, not quite, maybe 10 months or something. So firstly, it worked, right? So streams are up, ads watch are up, minutes were up. So it did kind of work, right? Users like it, they get it. And that's streams with filtered for the one that we auto roll. We're not cheating there. But as you can see, the cadence on these graphs is a couple of months, right? So this is before and then 2 months in. And actually what we got in the first little while was this this horrible lesson that most product managers feel in their bones, which is when you release a set of new features, users don't tend to react well to them. And they don't like change, basically. A lot of users don't like change, which is weird to people that develop products, because people that develop products love change, because they're always thinking about it, and they're always trying to do it. And so when you drop these out to people that come home and expect Crackle to be the same as it was yesterday, and it isn't, you sometimes get an adverse reaction. Your hypothesis is that they like it enough to stick with it. And in our case, we got it. But that dip, when you don't know how many weeks that's going to continue dropping, the we don't like your new product dip, is scary. And then you pull out. And in the old case of Always On, we pulled out within about a month, and within about 2 months, we were seeing really good results. It was back up to higher than it had been before. So that was an interesting learning, if it's just the white knuckle ride. And then the other one is, this is, I don't know, you guys are obviously a tech-savvy crowd, so you may have heard of Conway's Law. It's one of my personal favorites, which is the organization, the product will mirror the organization, basically. So I think Conway's example was a four-phase four teams working your encoder means you'll have a four-phase encoder, basically, right? So, and you see this with websites. You see it all the time where you can go and look at a website and go, ah, oh, the marketing department didn't talk to the retailing guys because they're in different bits of the site and the message isn't mixed together properly. And what we found with Always On was that we had a perfectly nicely executed product feature which merged scheduling and it merged content buying, and it merged the technology, but that the organization wasn't ready. And so we actually ended up with the reverse of this problem, which is trying to retrofit the organization to the UI, which is fun. So that was the lesson three. In response to that, within my team, because I run a technology team, we went away and did a bit of soul searching about how we were organized. And we realized that when we had a separate tech team and a dev team or whatever, tech team and product team, that things were falling down the gaps, right? So we looked at how products are generally developed, and we came up with these idealized phases. The purists among you might argue that tests should happen a bit earlier, but the way we approach that is actually by designing testable solutions. So we get the requirements, we validate them, we put them in the roadmap, we design the solution, make sure it's testable, an empirical type of solution. We then throw it into build, it's then tested, and then it's released to live. And all the way through, you're having user experience design baked into the process, because if you design it up front, you get to dev and you realize you can't build it. And that's expensive, like 50 grand a cycle kind of expensive. So you don't want to do it, right? So the whole team had about 60 people in this away day, and they agreed that this was the way that we did things. So the following week, I reorganized the team to be that shape. So instead of having product and tech and a few things like that, we actually created six teams that are organized in the way that work flows between the groups. So now your problem is handoffs between the teams. We have three big KPIs, which are reach, retention, and revenue. And so what we're doing is we're creating cross-functional teams around each of the KPIs, and it flows very neatly. And it's been a fun journey, and I wouldn't say we're quite perfect yet, but then nobody is in this world. I mean, this is effectively, I'm sure a few of you will have noticed that the org structure is effectively like a Kanban board or an Agile board, right? So tickets move that way as well. And this takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of continued work. So we're getting good results out of this now. It was a bit, again, a little bit worrying for a while when it kind of you get into that uncanny valley where things don't seem to be getting better. But I think we're really starting to see the results of the reorganization now, and that's helping us move the product forward, and it's helping us take a holistic approach to the user experience and to be user-centric rather than hiding in silos and only talking to other bits of the business. So this was a really good bit of learning. But we're not done yet. So Sony are investing a lot of money in Crackle, which is great for me. But also, we are reusing it as the white label platform for networks globally. So we're using it with different brands, and we're deploying it in different parts of the world. We pivoted the Latin American service to be subscription earlier in the year, and that's going really well. And then we've got some international projects in the pipeline as well, some stuff in Asia coming out quite soon. And we're reusing this product, reskinning it, and taking these approaches out internationally. So the learnings are benefiting the whole Sony group globally, or Sony Networks, TV Networks group globally, which is great. And it's very it's kind of gratifying for the team. It makes them feel good about it, right? And also, we're constantly working on the user experience. So most of what I had to say today, I've kind of said. The last thing I've got is a little clip of, if it works, where we are with the new user experience. So one of the things that we found with the old user experience is there were things all over the screen, and you were looking around. And that kind of increased cognitive load, right? And it made it a little bit hard to find things and select stuff. And it wasn't slick. So we redesigned it for the big screen. And this is it. Could you play that again so I can just point out what we saw? So, sorry. So what we're doing here is we're not moving the focus around the screen. So we're keeping the focus in one place, and the UI is coming to you so that you are remote control in hand. You're not looking down. You're looking at the screen, and you're looking at one place on the screen. And that speeds stuff up. And speeding stuff up means you're more likely to get a hit with a user coming into your service to try and find a show to watch, and that means more money, right? So this is great. Users like it. We like it. It connects people to the content faster. So this is the next iteration. We'll probably take this live. I think it's probably about 8 weeks away from deployment. We'll put it out on PlayStation, Xbox, things like that. But it's testing really well, and we're really happy with it. So as an evolution of the design, we're continually working on this stuff, continually improving. But fundamentally, it was a very fun, interesting experiment. You know, we learned a lot, and we've been able to apply all that and really turn it into ROI over time. Thank you.
Gulliver Smithers, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. I told you we saved the best for last.